like to invite you to listen to some other shows here on Real Liberty Media. We have Behind the Woodshed, evolutionarily engaging in counter-propaganda tactics and related work with Hal Anthony. We also have It's All Connected with Grimner and Circle. They connect all the dots. The subject doesn't matter. The connections are real and tangible. Also, we have Free Your Mind with Grimner and Moose Girl. You can break from thought constraints on the scope of your vision only by realizing those limits that have been presented to you do not apply to you. They are not real. Those concepts make people feel comfortable by giving them thought boundaries. This is the Free Your Mind show with Moose Girl and Grimner. Sit back and listen and see your way beyond the world as it has been defined. We have A Pondergander with Vinny. To Think and Reason, Raising Expectations Through Thought-Provoking Episodes. If you cannot do great things, do small things in a great way. On Sundays, you can sit back and relax and enjoy some music from Grimner. He broadcasts the Sunday Blues Show live on Sundays from noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. He plays all kinds of blues, from great oldies like Robert Johnson, Howlin' Wolf, and John Lee Hooker to the most modern hard-rocking blues from Joe Bonamassa, Poppy Chubby, and Samantha Fish, and all the stuff between, like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jack Bach Project, and Gary Moore. He also plays blues music from classic rock bands, the Rolling Stones, ZZ Top, and Cream. And while he's playing the music, we are in the Real Liberty Media chat on irc.freenode.net playing a rousing game of trivia. So come on over and join us every Sunday for some great tunes, fun trivia, and great chat. We also have a show, The Top 10 Countdown. Gary L. and Gigi's Boo play the top 10 songs from years gone by, and they provide some interesting historical facts and trivia about the songs and the era. These are all great shows with great content and inspiring messages. Come spend some time with us. Get to know us, and we will get to know you. Also, if you love what you hear and want to represent, we have Real Liberty Media gear. You will love the artwork and it will inspire conversation. Check out our Amazon.com store and Real Liberty Media goods from our website, reallibertymedia.com. It's Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist, here on Real Liberty Media. Nice to see you all again in chat. Great to be here on Real Liberty Media. Hey, today we have a birthday party going on the homestead here. And so there may be some extraneous noises out and about around the studio, home studio. And that's okay. Mostly we're kind of... Well, we already ate and had cake, so it's kind of just playtime now. Anyway, David, one of the grandsons, was turned 17 today. So, actually yesterday, so he's here and we're doing a little something. So taking an hour out to get the show in. Always enjoy this part of my weekend, that's for sure. Let's see. Oh, so I always kind of talk about NASCAR, and I wanted to talk about NASCAR just a little bit today because this weekend is not an oval track. This weekend is road course weekend, which kind of just, I think they do that to show that NASCAR people can turn right sometimes. There's like 20 turns in this course this weekend. So the trucks are racing, and I call it like the junior varsity, the Xfinity, and then the cup races tomorrow. Anyway, so that's it for NASCAR. So in the past, we have, I said a couple episodes ago, we're going to do at least one section per show on doing some kind of prep work for you know, whatever's coming at us could be anything. You know, right now it seems like economy's going to collapse or hyperinflation or, you know, God knows what. But it's always good to be prepared. And I have a segment planned today on how to gather meat. Probably most of you are pretty familiar with different ways to gather meat, but I'm going to throw some ideas at you. But before I get into that, I was thinking, you know, the first thing you really need to assess is your ability to do stuff. By that, I mean, you know, are you able to walk a few miles or climb or descend elevations? Can you get out in the woods? Do you know how to, you know, get out and get back? And are you able to do that? I remember about 25 years ago when I was about 40, I was thinking, man, I am fat and out of shape. I probably couldn't run half a mile if I had to. And I started kind of getting in shape then, you know, 40 years old. You know, a lot of us, well, I guess for me, definitely by 40, I was like, I'd given up on the whole staying in shape thing. But now I take it a little more seriously, just a little. I am not in great shape, and I'm not a health nut or anything like that. I do just enough to know that, well, that I can do stuff. I can either run for a while or ride a bicycle for a while or hike for a while, or if I had to, probably carry somebody a short distance to safety, or perform CPR for 10, 15, 20 minutes. But after that, you're on your own. You're not going to make it. If it's going to be more than about 10 minutes, I think I'd be pretty tired. Although adrenaline will carry you a long ways. But let's talk briefly about different ways of collecting meat. That's going to be the, I guess, the home survival topic of the day. Because I kind of went through this about 15 years ago myself. I was thinking of different ways to acquire food. And at the time, I don't know how in the heck I ran into this. I think I was renewing my license, hunting license, and the guy asked me, did I want to get a trapping license? And I was like, what? You can trap still? Like, I thought that was archaic. I didn't think people actually did that anymore, but sure enough, some people still make a living trapping. That's one way. It takes a little bit of knowledge to learn how to trap critters and how to trap critters that you can eat specifically. And you know, it's probably some animals you probably may not have considered eating before that in times of, you know, in times of need, you may think about eating all kinds of animals that you haven't eaten before. But anyway, so I learned to do some trapping. I mostly did nuisance trapping. After I learned the basics of trapping, I became a private nuisance control officer, basically, is what they call it. I don't know what they call it in Oregon, because I haven't kept that license up for a few years now. But if you learn trapping and you want to make a little money at it, and I think kind of easier, I don't know. I guess there's two ways to make money trapping, but I didn't really want to talk about the money-making aspect of it. But you can trap animals, harvest their fur, which that you do in the winter time when their fur is beautiful and thick. Or you can nuisance trap, which is you put your name out there, let people know that you'll remove animals, you know, for a fee. And then when skunks get in chicken coops or coons are stealing your cat food that you leave out on the deck or whatever, you know, you can go, charge a fee to capture and remove those animals. So, you know, probably some people are familiar with this, like, roadkill cookbook. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it, you know, some people kind of thought it's a joke to eat roadkill. But I lived in Pennsylvania for about 3 years, and that was from 92 to 95, I think, something like that. And I'll tell you, in Pennsylvania, it was really crazy. They had a law that if a deer was struck on the road, you know, killed by an automobile, you could actually harvest it. Now, deer is very different because I know a lot of people eat deer. I love deer, love elk. Well, they're both deer, but my point is that's kind of a common animal to harvest when you're hunting. Or, you know, it's kind of been a mainstay food in this country, I'm sure, for centuries. So, but in Pennsylvania, it was kind of crazy because if a deer got hit on the road and it wasn't like a total mess, people literally would have that deer cleaned up in an hour. Somebody would be there to, you know, harvest that meat instead of let it just sitting on the side of the road rotting and going to waste. And I always thought, man, that is such a great idea. Oregon finally passed that, I think, 1 or 2 years ago. So, you know, it's really different because now when a critter gets hit, there are people who are looking to harvest that meat. I mean, I'd love to have fresh venison out of season because a deer, I don't know about where you guys live, but deer here in Oregon are, you know, tremendously big. I'm sure there are some really big deer in Oregon. There's muleys on the east side, and we have whitetail and blacktail here on the western side of the state. And, you know, it'd be nice to have some deer meat. So we're always looking for a freshly killed deer. Hey, but I'll tell you something funny. In Pennsylvania, my neighbor, he was just a really good guy, and he was a hunter. He was the first guy kind of taught me how to bow hunt, and we bow hunted in Pennsylvania, a lot of white-tailed deer out there. But that guy had like a big steel grill on the front of his rig, and the purpose was, so if, you know, there was a deer running in the road in front of him, or that ran out in front, he didn't swerve away. He didn't necessarily try and avoid it, if you get what I'm saying. So there would be, you know, there would be fresh venison in his freezer often. And I'm sure some people here are going to make those changes also. And anyway, okay, so back to the roadkill thing. So some, like, some things I haven't tried, but I'm going to. One smaller animal, and this is why I was talking about trapping. So you can set a live trap, and there's some tricks to setting a live trap. I'll tell you kind of my method. If I have to trap some coons that are on the property causing problems, usually killing chickens is why I will trap a coon. I set a live trap, but before I put the live trap in place, I dig a small hole in the ground, and I put a can of cat food that I don't open, but I puncture a couple places so that, like, no critter could really get into the food if they actually got to the can. But the scent gets out. And something else I do, if I catch fish or go crabbing, I'll save crab guts and fish parts, and I'll put it in the freezer. And then when I need some bait, I'll take some of that and actually put it in a hole in the ground. And then I put my trap over it. And what that does, and of course, you have to kind of camouflage your traps a little bit too. Like, I'll usually take some brush from around the property and just kind of cover the trap up, so that when a critter is approaching it, it doesn't just look like a big, you know, metal cage there to for them to investigate. It kind of looks like a brushy little den that they're going to be entering. Anyway, so I put the I put the food in a can in the ground, or sometimes just a food in a hole in the ground, set the trap on top of it. Sometimes I'll stake the trap down so they can't push it around or move it. And then I, you know, set the doors so it's ready to go. And then, you know, when I do catch a critter, I basically just shoot them right in the trap and then discard of them in whatever way I'm going to do it, usually bury it on the property. But here's the deal. Like, I hear that raccoon is very good eating. So I've been waiting to catch a coon for a long time, and we've noticed on our game cameras that there's a couple coons cruising through the backyard nightly. So it's probably about time to set a trap, and then I'm going to try this. But I've had several people tell me that if you slow cook coon hindquarters, that it's really delicious. And I'm just telling you this because think about this. If it hits the fan, a lot of people are going to be out looking for food. Like, let's say you think you're going to be able to continue to buy food, and maybe you are. Maybe you have some kind of plan. Like, I know that there's several farmers around here that at least for a while I would be able to go and either purchase or barter services for a cow or a pig or goat or who knows what. But if you don't have that plan, if you think you're just going to go to the store and buy meat, and let's say you have a ton of money and you're just like, I'm not worried about it, I'll just go buy it. Well, if there's no meat in the store, or if there's no electricity to keep the meat fresh or whatever, you have to have alternative ways of obtaining meat protein. So traps are a good way to go. A live trap is a good way to go if you're okay with killing animals who are in a trap. Some people don't like that. There's also leg hold traps that you can use. The leg hold traps that we have today are not like the old style of leg hold traps, although I'm sure there's a lot of those old ones out there. The old ones used to clamp completely together. And, I mean, there was no space between the jaw. Now there's a space between the jaw. Trust me, it's only slightly more kind to the animal. It still is very uncomfortable for them to get their leg caught in a leg hold trap. I mean, it's basically crushing whatever limb they have in there. But they don't close completely. There's probably 1 or 2 millimeters of space between the jaws when they're closed. And then you still have to kill them one way or another. Now, I'm going to say some stuff that may be controversial, may make you feel uneasy, but a pretty clean way to kill some of these smaller critters is to smack them in the back of the head with a heavy object. I use rebar because it's, you know, heavy, and you can generate a lot of speed on a piece of rebar. And, you know, I don't like animals to suffer. It's not my thing. As a matter of fact, it makes me a little bit uncomfortable to have to kill animals, even to eat them. But, you know, Hakuna Matata, it's a cycle of life. So if you only have limited ammunition, a good way to dispatch animals is just to hit them right in the back of the head with a heavy, blunt object. And it does the job pretty darn quickly. So, it's fast and efficient. It usually isn't as messy as shooting critters. And sometimes there's some danger in shooting some critters. Now, let me think about this. Oh, yeah, skunks. Skunks are an interesting critter. Now, I don't know about eating skunk. I haven't had anybody ever tell me that skunk is delicious or not. But sometimes you're going to get skunks in your trap. and you have to get them out of your trap, and you don't want to get too close to them if you haven't set your trap up for a skunk. And by that, I mean sometimes, and there are some traps that are made out of PVC irrigation pipe that when the skunk is in there, they can't spray, and they can't, well, you can't see them, so they can't spray you. And they're actually a very convenient trap. I've never used one, but I see the operation, and a lot of people, I used to belong to a trapping group on the internet, and they would talk about how efficient this trap is. But anyway, you got to get that skunk out of your trap. Now, if it's a cage trap and you haven't set it up right, you're going to have to shoot it, because you can't get within 10 feet of that trap and not get sprayed. Trust me on this one. You might get lucky, but pretty much you're not going to get lucky. You're going to get sprayed if you approach a trap with a skunk in it, because number one, they're pissed off because they're in a trap, and their only defense is to spray you. So yeah, you're going to get sprayed. Now, there is a really easy way to get skunk smell off of you, and it's not tomato juice. Anyway, you're going to have to get that skunk out of the trap, which means you're probably going to have to shoot it from 10 feet away or more. And what I was getting at is skunks are a unique animal in that they can actually carry the rabies virus in their central nervous system, and they can either have or not have rabies, but they can carry rabies. And you can, by shooting a skunk in the head, you actually kind of spatter a lot of that rabies on whatever. Like, once you have opened up that central nervous system in whatever way, you basically are letting rabies, I believe it's a virus, free. And if you have animals, dogs and cats of your own, you know, they can get it, or other animals that are coming through the area, they can get it. So you want to be careful. As a matter of fact, there is a method for killing skunks. I'm not going to discuss it here because I've never done it, but it was pretty humane way. No, it wasn't. It's not really humane at all. It was a way to kill a skunk without getting sprayed and without shooting them. There is another way. So a lot of people now, but this, you have to set up the trap just right for this. Oh, I'm kind of getting off topic because I wanted to talk about food you can eat. And like I said, I don't know about skunks, but let me just tell you this. If you have a skunk in your live trap, what the old trappers used to do is they would just take that live trap down to the creek and they would drown the skunk and leave it in the water for about a day, a couple, maybe 12 to 24 hours. And the cold creek water would literally wash the skunk clean, and it would not have a scent when you pulled it out. And, of course, the fur would be all nice and clean, and you didn't spread rabies. You know, there's another method of dealing with skunks. Now, if you are literally trapping four skunks, what I do is I put a big garbage bag around my live trap, and then I conceal the live trap with brush and stuff and set it, and then I kind of check from a distance to see if there's a skunk in there by looking through the front or the back of the trap. And if there's a skunk in there, I know to approach from the side and just close up the ends of the bag, and then yeah, usually drowned the skunk. But anyway, so if you're thinking about doing some trapping or thinking about making that as one of your alternative ways of obtaining meat, remember, you're going to have to deal with some critters that, you know, you're probably not going to eat and could be a nuisance to you too. So let me tell you this real brief method of getting rid of skunk scent, and write it down if you live in an area where you get skunks, or you have dogs that get into skunks, because this will save them a lot of suffering, and maybe you too. But this is the recipe. You want Dawn dish soap, no other dish soap, just Dawn dish soap. You can try others. I'm just telling you, get Dawn dish soap. Get yourself some hydrogen peroxide, and not those little bottles of it. Go to a store that has big bottles and get like a quart or 2 quarts or a half gallon. And then get a big bag of Arm & Hammer baking soda. Okay, now this is how I do this. I have that big bag, like it's a bag. It's like a couple pounds of Arm & Hammer baking soda. And I open that bag up, I grab a handful of baking soda, I throw it in a 5 gallon bucket. I take at least a quart of hydrogen peroxide, I pour it in that bucket. And I take the Dawn dish soap and I squirt like 2-3 seconds of Dawn dish soap in that bucket. Then I go get my garden hose. And I put maybe a gallon of water in there with the hydrogen peroxide, the Dawn dish soap, and the baking soda. And then I'll take the skunk. Now, this is after the skunk's dead. So either put the skunk in the bucket and then put the lid on it and slosh it around and just leave it in there for a few minutes, and you'll be surprised. You could literally open that bucket and stick your face right in it, and you'll barely smell skunk. Now, if your dog gets sprayed, use the same mixture, but then get yourself some washcloths or a towel, like hand towels, and you soak them in there, and then you have your dog come to you, and then just start soaking them down. Now, I had a dog that... He was a good dog. We had to put him to sleep in the last year too. He was a really good dog. He was a Ridgeback Lab mix. But man, if he saw a skunk, he went flipping crazy. And so he would go after a skunk, and of course the skunk would spray him, but that would only stop him for a second. And then he would grab the skunk and shake the living bejesus out of it. And as soon as he let go, the skunk would spray him again. And he would get it like directly in the face. And this stuff that skunk spray, if you never had it like close to you, like it's like tear gas. It's horrible to get it like on you or in you or whatever. Like in your nasal passages or, you know, near your mouth and eyes. It's terrible. Anyway, my dog would be, you know, after we killed the skunk, either he killed it or I killed it. Then, you know, I'd have to deal with the dog. And, you know, God, they look so horrible. Hell, he'd be foaming at the mouth and his eyes would be watering and he'd be sneezing his brains out because they're just trying to get rid of that, you know, I forget what that oil is called. There's that from that gland. There's a certain kind of oil that makes that skunk spray stick to you and kind of stay on you. And I can't think of it right now. I'll probably think of it when I'm not thinking of it. But anyway, so we have the skunk kit is always ready to go. We just store all that stuff in the 5 gallon bucket. So we have the rags, the Dawn dish soap, Arm & Hammer baking soda, and hydrogen peroxide in the bucket. So when a dog gets hit by a skunk, we just go get the bucket and start going through the procedure. And anyway, Duke was his name. So Duke, they always come running to you when they're hurt or scared or been sprayed by a skunk. So he would, you know, he would come over looking for help, and then you just soak the rags and just immediately go for their face, just like soak their face. And you don't want to get this stuff in their eyes, but all around their eyes, all around their snout and their neck, you know, kind of get as much of that off as possible. And then some fresh water to get all that stuff off of them. And I'm telling you, that mixture works so good. I guess I have a minute. I'm going to tell you a story. Okay, I'll tell you the story. I'm going to condense it a little bit. Okay, so I was doing some nuisance animal control because skunks have been killing chickens in the chicken coop and taking eggs and stuff. And so I went down, I trapped this skunk. Well, I set my traps, and this one morning I was going to work, and I used to work at the coast, which is 42 miles away. And so I'd swing by there, and I looked, and I was like, oh, there's a skunk in a trap. So I called, and it was my friend, neighbor. I called my neighbor, and I said, hey, I said, there's a skunk in that trap. I said, have your son go down and shoot it, and I'll get it later today. Okay, this is what happened. It was August. It was about 105 degrees that day. The son went down and shot the skunk. Put the skunk in a 5-gallon bucket and left it in the middle of my driveway all day long until I got back from work at about 6:30 that afternoon. So I looked at this bucket in my driveway and I was like, oh my God, okay, this is going to suck, man. And so I got my skunk kick ready and I went and popped the top on that bucket. I held my breath before I got up there, just in case. And sure enough, that freaking, it reeked. You could imagine skunk with skunk spray sitting in a closed 5-gallon bucket in 100-degree weather for the day. Anyway, so I tossed, I mixed up the stuff in another bucket, and I poured it. I held my breath. Opened the lid on that thing, dumped the stuff in, closed the lid back on it, and I picked that bucket up and shook it around real good and just rolled it around. The lid stayed on pretty good. It was pretty watertight. And set it down, and I popped the lid off just to see how well it worked. And I could literally stick my face all the way into that bucket and could barely smell skunk. So if you have skunk trouble, or you just want to be prepared, use that recipe. I'm telling you, it's like the miracle skunk removal. Now, you'll still smell skunk a little tiny bit. It'll be kind of like that lingering, like, do I have skunk scent on me somewhere? Or, you know, it's kind of almost subconsciously you're thinking that you still have skunk scent on you, but, you know, trust me, it's so little that, right, who's smoking pot is right. That's a great mixture, so try that out. Okay, so a couple other things to keep in mind. And snares is another good way to trap critters. Now, snares generally will... Well, I should say if they're set right, snares will generally kill whatever critter you're setting them for. But occasionally they don't. But usually use snares on smaller critters. But hell, I caught about a 40-something pound beaver in a snare. So that's not really a small trap. And actually, beaver's really good too, by the way. So three things I wanted to talk about as far as trapping was kill traps, leg hold traps. Okay, so you have a kill trap that actually, there's some traps. Actually, you can make a leg hold trap a kill trap, and I'll tell you how you do that. This is also good for coons and critters that tend to damage water reservoirs that you use for feeding cattle and stuff, is you set a leg hold trap just inside the edge of the water, and you stake above that, and you tie it to like a brick or a weight, and toss the weight out in the water, and then, and you put a slide on the cable that you connect between the stake and the weight. And anyway, when the critter steps on and gets caught in that leg hold trap, they'll try and get away, but they can only go one direction. And because the little slide on the wire won't allow it to come backwards, it'll only go forward. And basically, they'll just keep going forward until they're deep enough that they can't come back and they'll drown. And then when you go to check your traps, you have a drowned animal there. So that's one way that a leg hold trap can be used to kill some critters. You got to be careful, though, because you don't want to use those where you have domestic animals running around. because they can get caught in them too, and it will kill them too. I was asked one time to get rid of some critters on a golf course, and I went and checked out the golf course. And of course, it's in the nice part of a small town, small city, big town. And there's so many people walking their animals by. I just told the golf course, nope, I'm not doing it. Because the only way I could get rid of what they wanted me to get rid of would be by setting some leg hold traps or some kill traps. And there's just far too many people walking their dogs and letting their dogs run around near and on this golf course by these water features. And I was just like, absolutely not. Don't want to take that chance. Okay. And so you actually have kill traps also that mainly water mammals like otters, beavers, nutria, muskrats, weasels or minks, some of those critters that come up and down the water lines, they'll go through this trap and it'll slam shut on their back and kill them pretty instantly. Snares can kill, but they're also sometimes just catch a critter and you'll have to kill it later. So the other, I didn't talk about bow hunting and gun hunting because most everybody is going to use that as their go-to, basically. But I'm kind of like these other methods because they're a little bit stealthier. Now, bows can be pretty stealthy, but you still have to be out and confront wildlife, face-to-face. And if you're in a survival situation, maybe somebody else is going to be there, following you or watching you to take the game after you shoot it, and there's going to be some kind of confrontation. I like trapping because if you're pretty good at it, you can get out and set traps and people never see them and never see you out there, and you can go back out and check them and harvest whatever you've got in your trap and bring it back, and you can be pretty stealthy about using traps. So kind of talking about the different sizes of meat that you may be harvesting, mostly traps you're going to harvest smaller critters. There's bear traps out there. You can try that if you'd like. I personally wouldn't want to come see a bear in my bear trap. But mostly just smaller game. And think about it. If you're looking for meat because whatever, the world's in crisis, there's no electricity, there's no money, there's no food being brought to market. Well, you don't want like 200 pounds of meat that you're not going to be able to preserve, although you can, but you're going to have to get busy. Like as soon as you harvest a big animal, you're going to have to get on preserving that meat because it's going to spoil if you don't get on it quickly. If you harvest small game in smaller traps, you're going to harvest, meat in a quantity that you're going to be able to eat and maybe preserve for a short period of time, and it'd be a much easier to process. So keep that in mind as you make your preparations, for survival, for whatever's coming at us or may or may not come at us. Just think about those things. I think that's a pretty good starting point. It goes along good with my sprouting operation. I sprout, so I have fresh vegetables to eat or mini little tiny vegetables to eat. And then, getting meat on a small scale. That includes fishing, too. There's actually some ways you can trap fish, which is kind of cool. Or you can just go fishing. But either way, just so these are just some tips. That's all they are. They're tips. I'm no expert. This is just some stuff I've done in my past and I plan on doing in the future. I'm really kind of dying to try raccoon. So hopefully we're going to catch one of these two critters here shortly. Okay, I forgot at the beginning of the show, I wanted to talk about Dexter, the mini Australian Shepherd. I mentioned last week that we're going to get Dexter, the mini Australian Shepherd, and that we would be getting him on the 5th of June. But guess what? Somehow the breeder got an early vet appointment and he is ready to go. So tomorrow it's road trip time. We're going to head up to Kalama, Washington, about an hour and a half away. And we are going to be picking up Dexter, the little mini Aussie, and bringing him home. And my wife is like ecstatic. And I really think it's going to do wonders for her. You know, it's she's really had a rough few years. She lost her mom a few years ago. Her mom was 97, lived with us for like 20 years, I think, something like that. And I don't think she processes death well, my wife. And then her little buddy, you know, that was a couple weeks ago. We put Bogey to sleep after suffering, you know, with that brain tumor for, well, a few months anyway. And we kept him going as long as we could keep him healthy and happy and, you know, thinking he was still having a good life. So anyway, I think my wife's really excited about that. And I'm really excited about that. So that's kind of fun, getting him a couple weeks early. So let's see. I always have so much crap to talk about. Oh, I'll tell you the next thing I want to talk about. I in the next week, I really wanted to talk about slave labor today. And I may get to it and I may not. It really looks like I'm not going to get to it. Because the bigger news right now, there's a couple things happening in Oregon, and maybe some of you saw this, that five counties in Oregon have voted to secede from Oregon and join Idaho. And I'm telling you, like, this couldn't make me happier, except that my county isn't one of the counties. These counties actually extend to the coast, which is kind of funny because that would mean that Idaho would have coastal coastal land. Now, you can imagine that Oregon's going to try and put up a fight and prevent this. So I know this isn't going to be an instantaneous thing, but I've already put the word out that as soon as this becomes a thing, let me know, because I'll be moving to Idaho, which may mean I don't have very far to move at all, or at least work in Idaho. And I'll be honest with you, you know, I don't know how the rest of the country feels about whatever's going on in Portland, but I can tell you this, and I'm not speaking for everybody who lives in Oregon. I'm speaking as a redneck country dentist who lives in the country, who loves liberty, loves freedom, wants to live life with the least amount of interaction with any kind of authority as possible, I can tell you this, and I'm not alone because I've had patients tell me the same thing. We don't give two craps about what happens to Portland. I don't care about the businesses that get destroyed in Portland. I don't care about the rioters that get destroyed in Portland. I don't care about anybody in Portland doing Portland. Honest to God, I don't. The businesses that are there, I think to myself, okay, you knew what Portland was like before you set up business there. Or if not, you knew what Portland was becoming as you watched over these past decades. And look, let me tell you, I was born in Portland. I'm an Oregonian, native Oregonian. This state is so flipping beautiful in so many ways. But the politics here, the restrictions here, the nanny state here is overwhelming. It's just impossible to live with freedom in this state. And, you know, the retards run it. They are just the craziest bunch of... I'm going to tell you how crazy they are. And forgive me if this offends anybody or not. I don't care. So, Oregon became the first state where businesses are forced to ask people if they've been vaccinated, if those people want to go in the store without a mask, right? You got that? So if you've been vaccinated, if you've had the jab, and you want to go in the store that has the signs up that say, you know, masks are required, well, the store, the government is telling the stores that they have to verify that you've had a vax, that you've got the jab. Now, it's kind of funny in a state where you don't have to prove that you were born with a penis to use one bathroom or another, or that you had a penis installed to use one bathroom or another, or that you had a penis removed to use one bathroom or another. You have to show proof that you were vaxxed to go shopping. The hypocrisy is insane. The world is insane. Grimner says, yes, retards are running everything. That's no kidding. So the best that we can do is, you know, what you guys have been doing. What I'm hoping to provide some help for other people to do, and that is to live freely where you are. You know, do everything you can to be as independent as you can. By independent, I don't mean, you know, no interactions with other people. As a matter of fact, I think some, you know, some cooperation can be beneficial. But man, you got to be careful, because really, there's only a few people you can trust in this world when things get really ugly, you know. But I think there's some times where you have to, well, you may need to rely on other people for some services or resources. So you have to pick and choose how you go. But anyway, I hope to heck, I was thinking today, man, if this goes through, I mean, you should see the small slice of Oregon that would be left. It's pretty much like the northwest corner, you know, from Portland, Salem, Albany, and Eugene west is kind of it. And actually, probably a lot of you don't know this, two other counties had already had that vote in years past, 1 or 2 years ago. They already, Cowboy Tech, I'm going to tell you something about that. Cowboy Tech just mentioned sales tax, though, and I'm going to tell you something about that, Cowboy Tech. But let me finish this. So two other counties in Oregon had already voted to secede and join Idaho. So five more, that makes seven. Guess what else? Shasta County in California and a couple other counties in Northern California also want to do the same thing. So, I mean, looking at it, Idaho could become humongous. Here's the thing about sales tax, Cowboy Tech. I'm a property owner. And I can tell you this, that if everybody paid taxes, so if everybody had to pay taxes, since we can't get to the point where nobody pays taxes, see, this is the way it happens here. Let's just take this little town of Sheridan, for example. So probably a huge portion of the population in Sheridan rents, right? They're not property owners, they're renters. So whenever they want, whoever they is, just air quote they, whenever they want to vote to increase taxes because they say they want to put new computers in schools, right? Okay, so a huge you know, segment of the population is going to vote to increase taxes. You know why? Because they don't pay taxes. At least they don't think they pay taxes. They don't see that that they're going to be paying the tax. And I'll explain that in just a sec. But what they see is, oh, we can vote for more taxes because we don't pay taxes. The property owners pay taxes. So then, you know, after the voting's done, I see I'm going to be paying another 10 cents per $1,000 to put new computers in the schools, right? And those people who are living, you know, in rental units downtown or in the apartments or whatever, and they think, yeah, well, good, we're getting those people, those property owners, to pay taxes. And then, you know, a couple months later, their rent goes up, and they're like, oh, why did our rent go up? You know, and the property owners are like, well, because we, you know, the taxes got raised, we got to pay for taxes. See, if you have a sales tax where everybody who buys stuff pays for it, people are less likely to pay for tax increases. So because I can't get nobody to pay taxes, I believe everybody ought to pay taxes. And the best way to do that is through sales tax. And yeah, it may suck. You may hate the idea. Personally, I've lived in states where there was sales tax, and I've lived in Oregon. And trust me, when everybody is going to be affected by a tax increase, the numbers are not so overwhelming to increase taxes because everybody knows it's coming out of their pocket. You know, here in Oregon, if you rent and you don't understand that whole process of how increasing property tax is going to eventually cause your rent to go up, you just vote for tax increases because you think there's more in it for you. And that's good. I mean, it's good to have good, you know, equipment in schools or good equipment in the fire department or good equipment in the water treatment facilities that you use in your city. But having only property owners being the ones who are paying the tab just doesn't seem... I just noticed in the states I've lived in that had sales tax that everybody kind of turned their head when you mentioned raising taxes. It's a lot different when you know immediately that if you raise taxes, it's coming out of your pocket. But, you know, when you don't have any skin in the game, or at least you don't think you have any skin in the game, it's very different. So, Idaho, sales tax, whatever kind, I don't even care. I don't even care. I mean, look at Idaho. People have been moving to Idaho out of Oregon for at least a decade. And, you know, there comes a point when, you know, you make that list of pros and cons, and you say, you know, like sales tax has now become so flipping low on the con side, like the pros to moving to Idaho or any other state that's got tax is like, hell with it. Don't care. Let's go. Oh, crap. Okay, I'm going to talk about one more little story and then we're going to call it. Wow, I have two very different times. Looks like my watch is way off. Must be dying. All right, so here's another story I wanted to talk about. This, I'm telling you, there's some times when I hear stuff that just, it's just one of those things. Okay, I don't know if y'all saw the cougar. And I don't mean that kind of cougar. I mean the puma cougar, the mountain lion cougar, the cougar cougar, the king of beasts in cougar country. In California, it was wandering around a neighborhood, a two-year-old male cougar. And they caught it. And it was pissed off. And they showed it in the zoo. And, You know, then they had, I got to get this person's name, not name, I didn't catch her name, but here, oh, she was the spokesperson for the Bay Area Puma Project. So the Bay Area Puma Project, BAPP spokesperson. So she actually said these words, which when I heard them, I kind of did a double take. And then I actually had to rewind this, my DVR, to kind of make sure. Actually, I couldn't even rewind it, come to think of it, because I was watching it live. This is what I did. I had to shoot over to another run of the news and wait for that story to come on. There's kind of like this 1 minute delay because I have antenna TV, which I get live. But if I bring it up on YouTube TV or whatever, streaming is what I'm trying to say. It's like a minute delay. So like if I see a story that I kind of missed, then I go back and turn on streaming service and I'll pick it up there. Okay, so this is what she said. These are actual words, so I'm gonna read it. Due to the increase of cameras, it may seem that there are more pumas, but the fact is the puma population is decreasing. And I had to laugh. So her argument is because there's more cameras, cougars are being spotted more often. And I was thinking about being like really unfair and just like explaining how this story makes absolutely zero sense, because of course this spokesperson, because it's her job to talk about how wildlife is being decimated everywhere and how to talk about how humans have driven these animals out of their wild woods, wild areas, and driven them into the city, right? And I thought to myself, okay, let's just look at this single cougar. This single cougar wasn't driven out of his wild habitat because that neighborhood's been there for decades, like literally decades. It wasn't like they started all of a sudden building a giant circle around this cougar and it forced him into this little neighborhood. This cougar strolled into town because the resources are better in town. It's not that he was driven there. And yeah, this is how that works, by the way. So when I have critters show up on my property, this is what I know. As I know, there's so many critters around the environment of my property that the numbers have now driven them into my property because now my resources look like easy pickings. And, you know, they've kind of been forced into my property because, let's say, in the raccoon population, there's so many raccoons that they're kind of taking up the resources that are out there. So then they come in. And like I said, it's easy pickings. Close the door, please. Close. That's what happens. Home studio. You get people walking in. Anyway, so the cougar didn't get forced into this neighborhood. The cougar went into that neighborhood because there's so many cougars out there competing for food in the wild habitat that he decided, I'm going to go in here where the pickings are easy. That's kind of my assumption. And being a biologist, I studied this animal behavior. I studied how populations move. I'm not saying that we don't intrude on wildlife habitat. I'm saying there comes a time when you got to look at things realistically. For this woman to say, spokesperson, to say that it may seem like the cougar population is increasing, but it's actually decreasing, I'd like her to provide some numbers for that, and I'll tell you why. And I am going to go just a few minutes long. I'm sure it's probably okay. If not, just tell me, Grimner, and I'll shut her down right on time. But years ago, in Oregon and many years ago in California, the PETA people, not specifically PETA people, let's say the environmentalists, the animal lovers of the world who, you know, admire the cougar for the majestic animal that it is, thought that it's really unfair that we hunt cougars with dogs. And ever since we quit hunting cougars with dogs, because that's the most efficient way to hunt cougars, is with dogs. And you know, dogs don't actually kill the cougars. Dogs tree the cougars, and then you go and shoot the cougar in a tree. Ever since we've done that, especially here in Oregon, you can look at the numbers. I can actually go get the numbers and provide them at some point. I'm not going to do it in these notes, but I'll think about it and keep it on my list to do it in the future. Ever since we quit hunting cougars with dogs, number one, the deer population has gone down. The elk population has gone down. All the big game animals that we love to eat have decreased because the cougar population has increased. And I'm willing to bet, even though I don't live in California, I'm willing to bet that the reason you see more cougars on cameras is not because there's more cameras necessarily. It's because there are more cougars. So that's it from Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist, here on Real Liberty Media. Thank you guys so much. Thanks in the chat room. You guys listening outside of Real Liberty Media, come and join us on reallibertymedia.com or rlmradio.xyz. Catch Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist, every Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time and some other great shows here on Real Liberty Media. Thank you.